Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to witness some scenes from the next attraction to play this theater. This picture, truly one of the most unusual ever filmed, contains scenes which under no circumstances should be viewed by anyone with a heart condition or anyone who is easily upset. We urgently recommend that if you are such a person or the parent of a young or impressionable child now in attendance, that you and the child leave the auditorium for the next 90 seconds.
Hey, thanks for coming back and watching another episode of the Video Nasty Project. Tonight we are reviewing Don't Go Near the Park. 12,000 years, two cavemen.
I'm in the park!
Those two cavemen, they're gonna get him. Let's watch the trailer.
Since the dawn of time, man has been plagued by the evil curse of the lusting vampires. The living dead have risen again. Don't go near the park. Keep out. This park is not for playing. The horrible truth will curdle your blood. They rise from the grave to wreak their ritualistic vengeance on the living. Zombies on a rampage of blood and terror. Don't go near the park. The gruesome reality, more shocking than your most horrifying nightmares. There is no escape from the supernatural fiends that stalk your soul. Beware. You have been warned. Keep out. This park is not for playing. Don't go near the park. Coming soon. Rated R.
And that was Don't Go Near the Park.
Should have been Don't Go Near This Movie.
When I first rented this movie, I went in knowing absolutely nothing about it. I'm thinking, okay, this is some sort of slasher flick where you got a dude lurking in the bushes, you'll jump out with a knife, kill people. I couldn't have been any further from the mark.
That is exactly what I thought when I rented this movie, too. And I read the back of the jacket, and it sounded like a slasher movie to me. It seemed a lot like Don't Go in the Basement or Don't Answer the Phone. You know, movies like that. And I started watching this, and I'm like, what is this?
It starts out with some text. And unless you are Star Wars, do not start your fucking movie with 3 minutes of exposition text.
No.
No.
It's going on about some nonsense about eternal life and how this is a true story or based on a true story or some bullshit like that. And then it opens 12,000 years in the past with cavemen 12,000 years ago.
And they don't look, very little effort is done into making them look like cavemen, except for the old crone lady.
And you've got our two stars of the movie. You've got Zor, or whatever the fuck his name was, and you got Pentanella, his sister. And they are brought before the old queen of the tribe, who is in the worst pancake makeup ever.
It's like they took an entire jar of Crisco and said, okay, we're going to mash this on your face, and then we're going to shoot really quick before it melts.
She curses these two for eternal life, that there's some sort of weird New Age mumbo-jumbo about once the stars have made a circle of the zodiac and the planets are next to the moon correctly, and in 12,000 years, if you do not complete this task of siring a spawn of your loins and then taking this virgin and then sacrificing this virgin to the moon star god thing, then you will be cursed with eternal life and eternal death and damnation and some shit.
In plain English, these two have been killing the other members of the tribe.
We find that out a little bit later down the road.
Yeah.
And the mother curses them for that. And that they have to live
10 years for every year of normal life.
And then when this alignment of the planets and stars happens, they sacrifice a virgin and their aging will stop.
And when we were first watching this, we had to stop the movie and parse out what the fuck was going on, because she's just rambling on about absolute nonsense. And there's like this reverb to her voice, so you can't really understand what she's saying in the first place. So we spent like 20 minutes trying to decode what the fuck was going on. And we're only 5 minutes into the movie.
They're doing a God voice thing with her, so it's got that little tingy echo.
Yeah. When I watched this movie, I repeatedly had to replay scenes all throughout the movie, not just the beginning, just to figure out what the hell was going on.
We flash forward from 12,000 BC to 16 years ago, so 16 years from 1981 or whenever the movie's coming out, and we pick up Zar or Zol or whatever the fuck his name is, the man, and he is trying to sire a spawn so that he can fulfill the prophecy when the stars and planets align. He goes to this street parade, finds this girl who is dancing in the crowd, and she heads off home. He follows her home, and I'm instantly thinking, oh God, it's going to be a rape scene, isn't it? Oh, fuck, rape. No, turns out it's not rape.
It's even weirder.
She goes into her house and takes a shower. He sneaks in and goes into the bathroom where she's taking a shower. And she freaks out. Oh my God, there's a man in my shower. And he's all like, oh, by the way, I saw the sign outside saying that you've got a room for rent. I'd like that room.
Why are you in my house?
Why are you in my shower, you freak? Get the fuck out.
I saw the front door open. I was concerned. I came in to see and make sure nothing wrong was happening. Whatever.
She says, that's great. Come right this way. Let me show you to your room.
As she's putting on it, wrapping a towel around herself. And at no point here have you seen any nudity.
And it's fucking Linnea Quigley. How do you not have Linnea Quigley in your movie and not show off her jubilees?
You see her in bed. She's naked.
Oh, that's right. You do see a little bit of her breast off to the sides. It's almost incidental boob. So, yes, balance has been restored to the Force. We see Linnea Quigley's breasts.
One of the things that annoyed me when this film is in the scene where she's gone into his room and she's snooping around, and he finds her in his room and he hypnotizes her, and she takes off her nightgown. It's like they stop mid-removal of the nightgown, and you're like, it's a screeching of the gears again, because this is Linnea Quigley, who is noted for being nude in a lot of various films.
Although, to be fair, this was one of her very early roles. She hadn't been established as clothes comes off the second I'm on screen.
Part of your mind is like, but why stop there? You know, it's like, oh, I was very disappointed by that.
My issue with the scene is not so much that we don't get to see Linnea's Quigley. It's not an organic edit. It just kind of, she's up a little bit and then just stops.
Yeah.
There's no transition to the next scene. There's no logical jumping off point.
No, the next scene is her at the altar with Zor getting married.
If I wanted to see her naked, I mean, I'll just go put on Return of the Living Dead again. I mean, that's not a problem.
I thought it was funny when we were watching it the other night together. And I said, yeah, that's Linnea Quigley. Huh?
No, bullshit. I had to stop and rewind. And, I mean, it doesn't look like her at all.
No, you're right.
Her hair is all totally different, and that's what was throwing me off.
First time I watched this, when I was replaying it constantly anyways, just to figure out what the hell was going on in the movie, when we came to the end, when I came to the end credits, because I was by myself, I was watching the cast, and I'm like, the hell? And I had to go back and rewatch certain scenes to actually recognize the actor or actress in question.
So she shows him to his room, says, you know, please, you know, I'll leave the key on the front table. And she goes off to do her business. And he sets about the whole plan of siring a spawn by hypnotizing her.
We had to guess that hypnotism was happening, because at no point do they actually show you that that's what's going on. Until later.
They he just has the close-up on his eyes, and she just kind of stops screaming because she's in her room. She's looking through his baggage because that's how you do a background check, apparently. He comes into her room, and she's, oh, my God, and starts freaking out, and he just does the Bela Lugosi eyes to him.
This is after the whole bit where they introduce her character in the first place. That's the reason why he calmed her down and she didn't freak out about a stranger walking into her bathroom while she's taking a shower. He hypnotized her.
We then jump another 5 or 6 years into the future where they're having a wedding, they're having a baby, they're having the baby's first 5 years old party.
Yeah, 5 years old.
And basically, they pad out the plot by building up this relationship between Dad and the little kid, whose name's Bondi. Jump to another 10 years down the road her 16th birthday. And they're at the party. They're at her 16th birthday party. And Czar comes out with this, like, amulet and gives it to her. And says, you know, wear this, it will be a bond between you and I. And then Linnea Quigley, she freaks out because, how come you're giving her gold and you've never given me shit? And they have an argument.
And the marriage ends.
And the marriage
ends. In front of all of these 16-year-olds who are guests of the party.
They very awkwardly get up and just kind of, we're leaving now.
Yeah, the couple goes into this complete bang-up argument. And all these poor girls that are the guests are like, what's going on?
And that's the last time we see Linnea in the movie.
Mother's gone.
Gone forever. Good.
There had been a few little things leading up to that where you could see that the couple weren't really all that happy with each other. But, you know, like at the five-year birthday, Mom's kind of standing off to the side just watching, whereas Dad's engaging with daughter and the various guests.
The movie then shifts to its third subplot genre switch, where Bondi, she takes her stuff, has had enough of overprotective father, and runs away. This is where we find out that she doesn't have very good decision-making skills because she's standing on the side of the street and this hippie van rolls up and this dude with this porn stash leans out and says, hey, baby, you want to ride? And she's like, all right, yes, I do.
And the van is full of younger guys.
She says, yes, I'll take a ride. They get in and drive off, and they're driving off into the Hollywood Hills, and the two frisky boys in back decide to start raping her. Yay, rape.
She calls on her dad for help via the amulet, which glows a bit while the whole thing is happening. And the van promptly tumbles off of a bridge down into a amazingly shallow ravine. And
about a 10-foot drop.
Yeah, and blows up. And then,
like, it was carrying 4 tons of dynamite in the truck.
Cut to her sitting near where the van crashed, completely unharmed, and you're like, how did she get there?
Did she teleport? Did they just not give two shits about continuity, which is where my money is?
Yeah. Did she fly out the window somehow and we didn't see it and land there? Who knows?
There's poor old Bondi by the side of the road, traumatized by being pseudo-raped, starts wandering off up into the Hollywood Hills, finds this dilapidated, run-down house. That's when we meet the other two kids of the piece. We meet the kid, the curly, black-haired kid from Voyagers.
With this amazing gap-toothed smile.
And then there's Cowboy, who is the slightly older, he's probably about the same age as Bondi. And they've been doing this runaway pony boy thing out in the middle of the Hollywood Hills, and they accept her into the tribe.
The older kid, he's not destitute or anything like that. He comes from a well-to-do rich family, and he ran away from home because he had a domineering father or something like that.
Another thing about the weird little tribe that they're in is the old lady, too, with the eye patch.
Yeah, the matron of the group is, shockingly, Petronella, the sister of the 12,000-year-old caveman magician.
The father of Bondi. This woman is, in actuality, her aunt. She doesn't know it.
And she runs around with this chrome mask on and, like, this hood. And I'm like, why are you wearing a mask? I have so many questions about this movie. Why the Crone Mask? Why the why caveman's living 12,000 years? Why so much not explained?
I do have a theory that she let the two boys stay there because they were afters, you might say.
And that's what I was thinking originally, too, was, oh, hey, you know, Bondi has just accidentally wandered into Petronella's larder.
Yeah.
It doesn't turn out to be the case.
No. In the midst of all of this confusion, the little boy is wandering out of the park. And he's been collecting flowers in the park, and he's selling bouquets.
And it turns out to be an important plot point later, sort of, because that's what attracts the eye of Bus Stop Dude.
Who is a... They don't clearly identify. He's a writer. So is he writing?
Investigator.
He's an investigative journalist. He's writing a book. But he's got the history of the park. And after this long plot exposition that is needless and goes nowhere.
And really doesn't make a lot of sense.
It's just the boy interacting with him. Establishing how they meet. They're building friendship. And it's long. And it's unnecessary.
Also, the weirdest thing about it is, although this guy has the shortest amount of screen time of any of the main characters, he's also one of the more engaging, more interesting characters in the movie.
That's because it's played by fucking Aldo Ray. The dude played against Bogart and the Duke, and now he's slumming it in a Buck 98 horror movie.
He was Fred Astaire movies. I mean, he was all over the place.
He was huge in the 50s.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this guy is a really interesting character, and just for the way he is.
And they horribly underutilize him.
So he's in the kid from Voyager's orbit for a while, and he dumps exposition on him and says, stay away from the park, and then falls off the map from the movie for the rest of the movie until the very end. The long story short is that Daddy catches up with Bondi and kidnaps her and takes her to basically Bronson Caves, the famous cave where Batman had the Batcave at. Everybody in Hollywood shoots at the Bronson Caves, so they take her there. And they start doing this. He starts raping her. Hello, you need a virgin to kill so that you can, when the planets are in a line, you can save your soul? No, I gotta get my freak on. Fuck you, movie.
You don't de-virginify. You're very elaborately set up sacrificial virgin.
So here's Czar, and he's in mid-coitus with his daughter, and Petronella shows up and says, what the fuck are you doing? And that's when he sicks the attack dog on her that was hanging out nearby, and she zaps him with her laser eyes. What the fuck?
What the fuck?
All of a sudden, 12,000-year-old caveman sorcerers have fucking laser eyes out of nowhere.
And full-on, like, Battlestar Galactica sound effect laser, too.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
And then, so Bondi, she grabs the amulet and eats it. Because Petronella says, eat the amulet.
This thing is, like, that long. And that freaking big around.
It's like trying to eat a manhole cover, but she eats the manhole cover. And then all of a sudden she turns into old Crone Woman from 12,000 years ago and says, you are not worthy, summons fucking zombies who up out of the cave and attack and eat Petronella and Czar,
who just prior to that are having a laser eye battle.
And then the cave collapses behind them. And then Aldo Ray comes in, starts digging them out, and says, come with me, we want to live. And they run away.
The end.
I have so many questions about this movie. So many questions about this movie. Okay, so you are cursed with a 12,000-year-old curse. And you have to generate a sire to sacrifice on the revolution of the moon or whatever. Why do you not take your daughter and lock her in the basement from year one and make sure she doesn't get raped in a van or wander away or
do anything unsafe?
why doesn't Petronella, she go and find a man and she produces a baby? That way you've got two babies in case one wanders away and gets raped in a van.
They allude a little bit that the brother and sister don't get along.
So yes, so this movie pretty much fails on every level imaginable. The acting is fucking awful. Particularly Aldo Ray and Barbara Brain should have been better than this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The one thing that is very noticeable is we can see how the kid got such a prolific television series. He actually is demonstrating that he has some really good acting chops.
But they were totally wasted here.
They were totally wasted here. Yeah. And the director didn't do anything with him.
The effects were terrible. I could do better effects. The story was so completely over the goddamn map.
One example of the underutilizing of the boy is he goes running back to the house. And he runs in screaming, "Bundy! Bundy!" And he's crying. And he sits down in the middle of the room and buries arms around his knees, buries his face down. And this static shot goes on and on and on. And then out of nowhere, he jumps up and runs off camera.
They kept doing this again and again and again with a lot of the characters. It was completely unnecessary.
Well, and that gets back to the tone of the movie. It doesn't know what it wants to be. Is it a 12,000-year-old caveman epic? Is it a teens on the run outsiders?
Yeah,
is it,
I gotcha.
Is it, you know, marital dispute between the two? There's characters that just drop in and out and never see again. It is just so tonally inconsistent. It doesn't know what it wants to be.
Talking before we sat down here, my observation is we could get a couple of gals, because we need a couple of women, and another guy, I guess, and maybe a kid. We all watch the film. We could go out into a freaking, like, volunteer park here in Seattle and with a single camera and improvise our way through the plot, and we'd come out with a movie that was a hell of a lot better.
After we finished watching the movie, we sat down. Once the shell shock of what the fuck did I just watch wore off, we started reverse engineering the script, and we came up with a so much better idea in like about 2 minutes, just totally shooting from the hip. Like, if Aldo Ray had been a more prominent force throughout the movie, he didn't show up to do exposition, he didn't show up to save the kids. There, he was like this. One of his kids had gone missing. One of his family had gone missing. So he's been investigating what's going on in Griffith Park for, like, years.
Yeah.
And so he shows up in the very beginning. Ditch the three kids. Just keep Bondi. And have him be the main focus weaving in and out of the story.
My vote for keeping the kid is that you put him in the circumstance of being in jeopardy. He's, like,
actually follow through with the larder idea that we had.
Yeah, yeah, and he's in jeopardy. So Bondi meets up with Taft, and they go tearing into the cave. Her father shows up again. They're about to nosh on the kid. They're both old. Wait, we don't need to worry about eating him to be young again. My daughter's here. We can kill her. It's the right time. We'll be immortal. Taft blows them both away with his trusty 45.
After a laser eye duel.
Why not? Let's keep the laser eyes.
So our recommendation? Smoke a fuck ton of weed and watch this movie and you'll be...
Laser eyes.
Laser eyes. What the fuck? So is it appropriate to leave Don't Go Near the Park off the list?
I didn't think there was anything really all that objectionable.
There was more breasts in Benny Hill than in this movie.
There's only one thing I could think of that could be considered a little weird and oversensitive in that. And Mary Whitehouse and her cronies aren't going to do this level of analysis. So this wasn't it. Okay, so you've got this girl, you've got Bondi. And she gets felt up by, like, a 12-year-old, and you see a lot of upskirt shots of her, mm-hmm. and a lot of panty shots, and you see her breasts occasionally. She's 16, or supposed to be in the movie.
Yeah.
So that's something to make people go, ooh, no. But that's also a level that Mary's not going to go to.
Yeah.
How old was the actress when she did this?
I have no idea.
Early 20s.
Well, then, you know, and According to the standards of filmmaking, this wouldn't have been all that objectionable.
Yeah. Now, the whole thing with God, the kid, Nick, or the boy from Voyagers, he's actually pretty young to be, like, putting him in a scene and having him do that. I was like, really?
So the only other thing I can think of that would have caused the movie to get lumped in was it was in the don't category. The don't go in the woods, don't go look in the basement, don't open the window.
Yeah.
That's probably why this movie got nailed.
Yeah. Those other films of the similar titles got pretty notorious.
So, off the list. It's fine. Acquitted. Not a problem. Brad? Did you like Don't Go Near the Park?
I liked aspects of it. I generally didn't like it, though. I felt that the writing was really poor. It went all over the place and was pretty difficult to follow.
Did you like it?
No. There's moments that are like, this is really good, and I kept that Looney Tunes or Warner Bros., whatever you want to think of, that the sound of a car suddenly coming screeching to a halt. What happened all the way through the movie?
The movie makes Ed Wood look like fucking Orson Welles. When I was watching this,
wow. That's cold.
When I was watching this, I was running the full range of emotions from confusion to anger to bafflement to... But I will give the movie this. The one thing I didn't experience was I was never bored.
Okay. That's a good point.
I concur.
Yeah.
I concur.
That's a very good point.
Never bored.
I was not bored watching this, but dear God, it's a piece of shit. All right, there you go. It's a piece of shit. Watch if you're a completist. All right, we'll catch you next week.
Hey, thanks for watching another episode of the Video Nasty Project. Please like and subscribe. Click on the little bell to know about next episodes, which will be Don't Look in the Basement. Until then, have a good night. And stay evil.